You are listening to Soul Searching on KSFR with Rabbi Neil Emswich from Temple Beth Shalom. Soul Searching is a journey where I engage with faith leaders and academics to explore deep questions of meaning. Questions that all of us ask at some point in our lives, such as, why are we here? What is right and wrong? Is there good and evil? Is truth relative or absolute? Is there life after death?
And to help us in our journey this evening, we're very honored to welcome to our show Rabbi Denise Eger, international Jewish leader and social justice activist, founding rabbi of Congregation Kol Ami in West Hollywood, past president of the Central Conference of American Rabbis, the international organization of over 2,300 Reform rabbis. And Rabbi Eger also served as the first openly gay or lesbian person in that position, and was the first woman ever elected as president of the Southern California Board of Rabbis, which includes Reform, Conservative, Reconstructionist, and Orthodox rabbis. Rabbi Eger is also the editor of the groundbreaking book, Mishkan Ga'ava, Where Pride Dwells, a celebration of LGBTQ Jewish life and ritual, as well as the co-editor of the recently published Gender and Religious Leadership, Women Rabbi Pastors and Ministers. Rabbi Eger, welcome.
So happy to be here with you, Rabbi Neil.
It's just so wonderful to have you here with us. And through the wonders of technology that we can connect with people outside Santa Fe as well and interview them as well. So I was looking through this book, Mishkan Ga'ava, Where Pride Dwells, a celebration of LGBTQ Jewish life and ritual, which I honestly found to be transformative. And I wanted to ask you, why this book in 2020? Why, you know, we have gay marriage, we have in our Reformed Jewish congregations, we're largely very supportive of LGBTQ individuals. Why do we need this? Doesn't the regular prayer books suffice? What caused you to want to write this?
Well, I'm so glad you asked that, because Where Pride Dwells is a collection of prayers, meditation, and spirituality, and a few essays on the LGBTQ Jewish experience, religious experience, and spiritual experience. And while, you know, the general prayer book and general spirituality material that might be applicable to all people has some things that would relate to an LGBTQ person, there are particular moments in an LGBTQ person's life or their family and allies' life that the tradition doesn't speak to. And so the whole process, if you will, of coming out about one's sexuality, a whole process, if you're a transgender person, of the transition between genders, all of those moments need spiritual expression. And so this book has been an opportunity to write and create rituals and write and create prayers to mark the unique moments in a lesbian person's life, in a gay person's life, in a transgender person's life, in a queer person's life, non-gender conforming, with a Jewish grounding deep within our tradition. And I'm very excited about it because it really is groundbreaking. There is no other religious denomination, Christian, Jewish, Baha'i, that has anything that really centers the voices of LGBTQ people in this way. That's the official prayer book of the denomination.
And, you know, what you're talking about in terms of acknowledging that spirituality, as I was looking through this book, and I'm a straight guy, and, you know, a prayer before starting, prayer before beginning hormonal treatment. And I thought, wow, I never thought of that as a spiritual moment. But that's because in my norm, it's not, is it?
Right. And your norm as a cisgender, man, is not the norm for someone who is a transgender person, who is transitioning genders. And to understand that they are who God made them to be. And now it is time to have the internal and the external be in one unified whole. And how beautiful we can mark that as a holy moment in their lives. That's what we Jews do, right? We try to take mundane moments and make them holy. We say in Hebrew, from chol to kodesh, right? We do that with everything with eating. When we say a blessing over the bread, it's trying to take something that we have to do, we eat, but to take a mindfulness moment and to acknowledge God and to acknowledge our struggles as a human being and the process of how that food got to the table, right? And the same thing is true for these individual unique life moments in the LGBTQ person. They are different than those necessarily. There's some we share with heterosexual people, no doubt, but there are some unique moments, and this gives a grounding in Jewish prayer and thought and philosophy, if you will.
Why, as a rabbi and somebody who loves liturgy, I'm profoundly moved by this book. But why do you think that people of communities who aren't part of the LGBTQ community, what do you think they can gain from this? I know I have my thoughts, but I'd like to hear from your perspective, because you're not just writing this for LGBTQ Jews, are you?
Oh, that's correct. This is not a book for queer people only, if you will. And there's a lot of prayers and blessings in here written by straight people, sometimes family and friends, sometimes community members. It's about the notion of inclusion and embracing. And I think what the prayer book does, and this book of essays does, is talk about and weaves in the LGBTQ experience into the whole communal life. You know, it's one thing to say you're tolerant, but that doesn't mean that you are embracing of LGBTQ people. And that we also acknowledge with this book that individuals have unique experiences in the world, and that is normative, right? That's an important statement. Not everything is based on one group's experience. And that's part of the broadening of the Jewish tent, of Abraham and Sarah's tent, of what's authentically Jewish.
I find it fascinating when you focus on the difference between being tolerant and welcoming. Can you speak a little more to that? Because a lot of communities say, well, we tolerate everyone. But what's the difference for you in religious communities? What needs to happen for you?
I think it's a really good question, and it doesn't only center around issues of sexual orientation or gender identity. We could have the same discussion around issues of race, of social class. When we really are talking about being really inclusive, it's not enough to say, well, you're welcome in my space. It's about changing the space to represent and include all the voices. This is what we're seeing in the United States right now around the Black Lives Matter movement. It's not just white people's experience that is the mainstream. We have to look at everybody's voice as being part of the mainstream, and that experiences will be different. And to celebrate those differences, not to be afraid of them, but to allow the space for people's voices to be centered. So for the LGBTQ community, this means for, a church or a synagogue, an organization, a community organization, to be really embracing, has to allow for more than just, well, you can show up at our events. You can show up and you can be welcome, but that doesn't take my experience as a lesbian woman into consideration. That my family, two women, and I have a grown adult son, is a normative family. It's not different than your family. It might look different on the outside, but my child's experience of growing up was just as valid and important as your children would be. And that is part of the challenge of being an inclusive and embracing community. Because you have to talk about stereotypes that people hold. And fears, and to be open and honest about them.
So I guess my question that comes from there is, when we include, how do we include without patronizing? How do we include without saying, okay, well, now you've got a prayer about race. Now you've got a prayer about LGBTQ issues. So now you're included, you're welcome. What's the process for communities, religious communities? And it doesn't just have to be Reformed Jewish communities, obviously. It can be any faith community. How do they include people without tokenism?
Yeah, tokenism is a danger. You know, doing one thing is not enough, right? It's And that's why this book, I think, is so, Mishkan Ga'avah, Where Pride Dwells, is such an important book, because it speaks volumes about our religious denomination. It's not enough to say, oh, my congregation celebrates pride, and we're going to march in the pride parade in our city, and that's going to be what we do for gay people. Mm-hmm. Well, we have to look deeper into that, and how do we have examples of gay voices, lesbian voices, trans voices throughout the year? How do we have same issue around race? Are we having, oh, we're gonna observe Martin Luther King Day, and that's gonna be our community's way of acknowledging African Americans and African American history, and that's enough? How do we center the voices of African American leaders and in everything we do as woven into the community? So I'm just going to pick on you, Rabbi Neil, because you're here with me. When you give a sermon, mm-hmm. what are the voices that you quote in a sermon? Are they always white old Jewish rabbis? Or can you bring in somebody that you know is a openly lesbian person? Can you bring in a voice of a person of color and their experience to illustrate what is your sermon about, I don't know, taxes and social justice? I'm just making it up. But
no,
I think
it's a good point.
This is how to go deeper into that discussion. And then I think the other piece of this is to begin to deal with our fears, our worries, and to be open and honest about the places where we might still be harboring anti-gay feelings, worry, you know, the old gay, what they called the gay panic defense. Oh, if I do too much gay stuff, we're going to be marked as a gay community. And then what will happen to our temple, or what will happen to our church? No, it's about making an open space. But we have to be acknowledged and to be able to be in dialogue about those fears of people and help them move to the next level.
I think what you said earlier about the mainstream is really important, because I think as a kid in my temple back in England, I just thought this was the voice of the temple, and not realizing that the mainstream voice of Jewish tradition has in the past been a straight voice. Yeah. You know, when we sing Lecha Dodi, for example, a particular prayer, which I saw a very nice alternate version in Mishkan Ga'avah, you know, thinking, but this is a normal metaphor, husband meets wife, and they draw together and connect, and that's fine, and that's a perfectly good metaphor, and everyone understands. So it's interesting, I think, what you're talking about to me is not necessarily challenging the mainstream in a fearful way, but opening it up to say the mainstream needs to have more voices, otherwise it's
and more examples. I mean, you know, think about the kids that sit in your schools. There's a percentage of them that are going to grow up to be lesbian or gay or transgender or are transgender. And if the only picture they have is of, let's say, a husband and a wife, and how do they have room in themselves for the world? You know that in the United States that there is a higher incidence of teen suicide among LGBTQ young people that's epidemic. It's about a third higher than if you look at heterosexual teens and the issues that they have. Why is that? Because there's still so many messages in society that make it shameful for people that guilt people about being LGBTQ, so much that frankly religion has done and still does in this country to try and force gay people into being something that they're not. Rather than how can we help individuals live whole, healthy, and I'd like to say holy lives, as right, and to be their best selves, and to acknowledge how God made them. And, you know, of course, as you know, Rabbi, we say in Jewish tradition, B'Tselem Elohim, that everyone is created in the image of God. Well, it doesn't say in Genesis only straight people created in the image of God. That means all people. So that's part of why this book, Where Pride Dwells, allows that opportunity for that voice, for people to see themselves in Jewish life, in Jewish tradition, and allows for non-LGBTQ people, straight, cisgendered people, to enter into that voice and to be witness to that voice.
We have to take a pause. I want to pick up after our break on what you talked about just before, about the damage that some people who are religious can do. And so we're going to come back to that question after our break, because I think it's a really important question. So we're going to take a pause. You're listening to Soul Searching on KSFR with Rabbi Neil from Temple Beth Shalom here in Santa Fe. My guest this evening, Rabbi Denise Eger, international Jewish leader, social justice activist, and author of Mishkan Ga'ava, Where Pride Dwells. And we'll be back after this break. You're back listening to Soul Searching on KSFR with Rabbi Neil Amswich from Temple Beth Shalom in Santa Fe. My guest this evening, Rabbi Denise Eger, international Jewish leader, social justice activist, founding rabbi of Congregation Kol Ami, past president of the Central Conference of American Rabbis, and author of the groundbreaking book, Mishkan Ga'ava, Where Pride Dwells, a celebration of LGBTQ life, Jewish life and ritual. And before our break, we're having a fascinating conversation about welcoming as opposed to tolerating, but you mentioned something which I really don't want us to miss out, which was the harm that can come to some LGBTQ people from religious groups. And so I guess the question that I wanted to ask is, how can the LGBTQ liberation civil rights movement better combat anti-gay people who say that they are religious?
Well, it's a very powerful question. And the truth is, the LGBTQ community needs religious leaders, both ordained and lay leaders, to be allies in this battle. There are so many faith traditions that continue to trap and harm LGBTQ people, saying that they're disposable, that somehow that their lives are not valued, that they are sinners, if you will. Mm. And it really takes a deep understanding of text and culture to understand why, particularly now, it's important to welcome and embrace LGBTQ people. First of all, in the United States, this has been a battle around civil rights, as we know, and churches' influences have tried to skew and push aside civil rights, equal rights, for LGBTQ people, not only nationally, but state by state. And it takes really religious leaders, and like in our Reformed Jewish movement, we have had a long history of embracing and welcoming LGBTQ people, and also standing side by side with the LGBT community for those civil rights. Because we Jews understand what it means to be targeted based upon who we are. It happened to us how many times throughout the centuries, whether in Spain, because we wouldn't accept the Catholic Church, and then the Inquisition, and the expulsion from Spain, right? Or even, as we know, right, in World War II during the Holocaust, and we know what that feels like to be targeted. And that is what happens. Many religions target LGBTQ people as not normal, as weird, as an abomination. And it takes people like you, Rabbi Neil, like your congregation, to stand with the LGBT community to say, do no harm. These are God's children, and we deserve not only equal rights on a footing, but to be lifted and celebrated for who we are. And I think that's one of the things that the Reformed Judaism has done for many decades, and has really been alongside the fight in that battle for equality.
I think a lot of those people, though, say, but you don't know what God wants. Open up the Bible. It's right there, you know. I know what God wants. How do you respond to people like that?
Most of the time I don't even bother to respond to people like that because their ignorance about the Hebrew Bible is deep and great. There is no time, and most of the time those folks are actually far-right evangelical Christians. And the truth is, no, not once does Jesus say the word homosexuality. Not once in the New Testament. And the truth is, in the couple of passages that may hint at something about sexual relations between two men in the Hebrew Bible, it's completely unclear what is being spoken about. Mostly it is spoken about as an issue of rape and dominance, mm-hmm. which was common in the ancient Near East, and certainly throughout the Roman Empire, as a way to humiliate your neighbor, to humiliate those you conquered. It's not talking about what we're talking about creating loving relationships, stable family relationships between individuals. And I think that's it's a radically different idea. So, you know, the truth is you and I can prove the Bible says just about anything. And most of those people that are out there protesting LGBTQ people are eating shrimp. And the Bible says much clearer about do not eat shellfish than it has anything to say about homosexuality.
You know, thank you. The risk of damage is obviously very real. And I was very profoundly moved. It's on page 15 of Mishkan Ga'avah, where pride dwells, a prayer for safety.
I want to tell you a little bit about this particular prayer. I'm so glad you pointed it out, Rabbi Neil, because you'll notice it's written by anonymous.
Yeah.
A 21-year-old, and it was written in 2019. This is a young woman who still feels as if it isn't safe for her to put her name in a book.
Yeah. And I think this is, I'd actually like to share this, if I may. So that our listeners hear the kind of liturgy that we're talking about here. This is a prayer, and it says, God, place me in a safe environment where I do not need to fear for my safety when I am with my significant other. Help create a world where I can hold their hand, be affectionate and love my partner without hatred causing harm to my physical and emotional well-being. Keep me, my family, and my partner safe when our existence and love is tried by those who do not accept us and our lives. And then has the Hebrew, which translates, blessed are you, Adonai, our God, guardian of Israel, whose shelter of peace is spread over us, over all your people, Israel. I mean, it's so powerful, all your people, and over Jerusalem.
Yes.
I found that so powerful as a prayer to include, because for me, that almost encapsulates the whole book, which is this sense of finding God in real experience.
Yes.
And just because that's not my experience, I can walk the streets and feel safe. And I can hold my wife's hand and feel not judged at all.
And it's not a sexual thing that you hold your wife's hand. You hold your wife's hand because you love her and you want to show her affection. It's not sexual at all, right? It's about love. And ultimately, that's what LGBTQ people are talking about. It isn't about the sex. It's about love. It's about creating a family that understands that larger notion of I am who I am, and I want to be whole and healthy and create that safe space. That is exactly that prayer. But it does speak volumes that even in 2019, even when we have gay marriage, even when we have, the Supreme Court this past year said, that Title VII includes protections for in jobs and employment for LGBTQ people. You know, before this, there were still 33 states in the United States where you could be fired. You could get married on a Sunday and you could go to work and put your picture up of your spouse and you could be fired on a Monday. And it wasn't until the Supreme Court just this year, just in this term, said that no, that you can't fire somebody for being gay or transgender. Right. So there's still much work to be done on the front of equality. And we hope that this prayer book, Where Pride Dwells, will inspire people to take seriously their spiritual journeys, both as LGBTQ people and as sacred communities, as we talked about, to embrace. And I want to just say, there's been a lot of people that I work with in the interfaith world, particularly in the Christian world, who's been like, oh, this is good. Some of these prayers are applicable in my community, you know, that's been so marvelous and so eye-opening, I think, for a lot of our interfaith partners to think about how they're including LGBTQ people in their prayer space as well.
And I guess partners is the next question for me. I appreciate we only have a few minutes left, but how can we partner? How can we ally? How can we, you know, what's best to help be inclusive? What's best to sharing this liturgy, listening to the voices, creating new rituals. Is there anything else? What's the next step for us? Because I read the insecurity and the desire for inclusion. I hear that voice but we are mainstream too. It's just you didn't let us be mainstream. How do we help that next process? That what's the process of welcoming and inclusivity that needs to happen next?
I think those are really good questions, and I think each, you know, religious community or organizational life, it has its unique moments. But I do think there has to be an open conversation about what is will look like for us to be an inclusive and embracing community, to find partners within your local neighborhoods. There, you know, Santa Fe is an incredibly got an incredible LGBTQ community. What partners, both organizationally and individually, can we have to help learn more about this? How can we have human rights campaign? I know does a lot of work in Santa Fe. How can we partner with the Human Rights Campaign to ensure the civil rights are for all people, both locally and within our state and nationally? And I think those are conversations that have to happen. And I think that the more they can happen, you will also send a signal to the LGBTQ people within your own congregation and the children growing up, because there are in your, you know, there are, they may not have told you yet, but there are that their home, their sacred home, has a space for them as well. And I think this prayer book of Where Pride Dwells, I have a few copies in each of your, you know, in your shelf, of course, in your study and in the congregation, that it's not just a one-off. Sends also a huge signal to family and friends of LGBTQ people that also need embracing and welcome as well.
And I think also, for me, I'm learning the reminder of the appreciation that we all have a different sacred journey. And so my sacred journey might follow a very traditional perspective, although not that traditional, I guess. But we don't get to define other people's spirituality. I think that's part of it for me, isn't it? And that for me really comes out of the pages of Mishkan Ga'avah, Where Pride Dwells.
Right. And as you say, each person's spiritual journey is their unique journey. Don't make assumptions. Don't make assumptions that my spiritual journey is the same as yours or somebody else's is the same. So I think that's really important to center those voices. And I think it makes a big difference to have that sensitivity. It changes your way you relate to people. And you really does help you to see the divine in each and every person.
Thank you so much. I so appreciate this. I've learned so much from you, and I do hope that you'll be able to join us again to take this conversation forward. It's been absolutely wonderful.
It's been a delight to be with you. And again, all your readers, Where Pride Dwells is available on Amazon, and it's available at ccarpress.org in the Kindle form, if you prefer Kindle. And thank you for having me today.
So thank you to Rabbi Denise Eger, author of Mishkan Ga'avah, Where Pride Dwells, a celebration of LGBTQ Jewish life and ritual. Really, thank you so much. You've been listening to Soul Searching with Rabbi Neil Amswich from Temple Beth Shalom and from the Interfaith Leadership Alliance of Santa Fe. Until we return again in 2 weeks' time, keep searching.